Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're gonna rehash a little caught stealing because Adam got to see it. So hopefully, if you wanted to see it, you went to see it. Probably bitch about Alien Earth.
Oh for God, yes.
A little bit longer.
Yes. Well, there's news that dovetails into that. There's definitely news, like some disappointing news we heard this week. So we can talk about that, and then
yeah. I guess let's just go ahead and drag that out and try not to harp on. We've been really negative about the show, and rightfully so. furthering our negativity about the Alien franchise, Fede Alvarez announced that he's passing the baton with no real reason other than like, I did what I wanted to do. So,
but he said that he wrote the script, which is weird, to which, like he said that he doesn't do, and it's true, his filmography shows he does not do second films, because Evil Dead 2 he didn't do, Don't Breathe 2 he didn't do, and now this one, and then also it was because it was a disaster, it was a bomb. The girl with the dragon tattoo or whatever, the girl that kicked the hornets, whichever one he did, the Girl Who series, he did one and it's done. I don't know, man.
So from a purely like self-motivated creative standpoint, like he wrote a script, so clearly he has a passion for it.
Yeah.
But from the point of view of like, how often does somebody do the sequel to the thing and it's met with the same enthusiasm and love and whatever that the first one is? Now, I mean, it wasn't like all out love for his movie. There were a lot of people who didn't like a few of his choices. But I kind of understand that. Like,
yeah,
you go back to the well. Cameron did Terminator 2. That was the first sequel to his own thing he had done, right?
Yeah.
And he was just like, no, I said what I wanted to say. And Cameron kind of largely stuck to that, Avatar being different because he sees that as like the only thing he'll ever do. So I kind of see his reasoning for, I got my bite at the apple. It was really, really good. And I'm not going to come back only to have more studio interference. You have somebody else who, despite our criticism, seems to be putting on a successful show, because we're outliers for the most part, I think.
Which is a random thing, man. Like, I listened to a podcast where they called him
The Midnight Boys seem to really be enjoying the show.
I had to turn off the Midnight Boys because they were so effusive with their praise, and I'm usually right in line with them.
They also love Andor, and I find Andor infinitely boring. So, for Star Wars stuff, if Andor were not about the Star Wars universe and were just a space show, I think I would be a lot more positive on it. But because you put Star Wars on it, I'm like, this is boring, man. this sucks. This absolutely sucks.
It really does.
And it may turn out okay. Like,
Yeah.
Maybe they get another, like, I don't want to say unknown because Fede Alvarez wasn't unknown, but somebody who hasn't stepped into, like, this level of genre filmmaking. Because, I mean, he'd worked with budgets, but nothing, I don't think anything compared to, like, what you would do with this.
No.
And also, to his credit, that's kind of been the Alien franchise. Outside of Ridley, nobody's made more than one movie.
Nope. And look what happened with Ridley.
Yeah. Like he got lost in his own bullshit with this. So
yeah. Like there's a way, like, I would be positive about this. But, I mean, he's already doing another movie, so he can't do it. Because, like, they're planning to shoot in October or November. I was like, what? Of this year? I was like, when I read that, I had to read it twice. And I was like, oh, he just left the project. Which makes me even wonder even more about the troubles and how much interference he was getting already. Like, I guarantee, it's a situation that I can already see. FX saw the numbers that they're getting on Alien Earth. Ridley saw it. The writing's on the wall. They probably wanted to do exact, like, they're probably fucking with this clone, this Android AI bullshit again. And doing what Ridley does best, which, like, you know, seems to be making worse carbon copy, like, the multiplicity rule, which is something that we've talked about before. What happens when you make a copy of the copy of the copy? Of the
copy, yeah.
It comes out, hello, Steve.
Yeah.
I like pizza.
Yep. That movie's so funny.
Oh, God.
We're going to go eat a dolphin. We're going to go pet a dolphin. Yeah, we're going to go pet a dolphin. A
dolphin.
When he shaves his tongue in the mirror, oh, my God. He's like, yes. It's okay. I took the blade out so he can't hurt himself.
That's Alien. That's Ridley Scott when he's making these alien fucking movies. And apparently, yeah,
somebody take the blade out.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously. But my thing is like, you could get a guy like Timo, who just recently did Nobody 2, and that would be a great choice. Because he did horror, he's done action, he's messed around in the $30 to $50 million budget range now with his Netflix movies and Nobody 2. He understands, he has a visual eye, he has an understanding of, like, genre. But, like, I'd hate to see him get into a situation like this because it looks like it's a den of wolves. Like, just, Ridley, you know what? We already know what you want to do. Either give it to Noah Hawley, which it feels like they're going to do. Or do it yourself. Like, it really feels like they really want to go back to this Android bullshit. And I am so sick of it, Logan. Yeah.
It's such a small part of the thing that has become increasingly, and I know we've complained about it a lot, but
yeah,
it's just like, that's not the story. It, for me, at least, it's not the story, you know. And we're losing the humanity of it, weirdly enough.
Yep, very much so.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And then coupled with watching Alien Earth week to week, and every episode sitting there going, like, I really want to like this show.
Yep,
it's absolutely gorgeous. There is 5 minutes in this most recent episode that's fucking astounding. But so, first of all, why didn't we start here?
I like, there is no narrative sense other than Noah Hawley likes to fuck around and be special. And I'm not,
we don't learn anything we didn't already know other than the espionage angle.
That's it. Well, and, like, you know, that's all that this, okay, so,
it's, I do literally, think, I cut you off.
No,
I do think that this is the best episode of the show so far. I think it's better than the first episode.
Okay.
but I still didn't like it. So yeah, go ahead.
No, absolutely no. Like, please. That corporate Armitage bullshit is so much a part of this that it takes away, like you said, it's losing its humanity. It really is, because you have a bunch of crew members that we have zero shits given about, and their storylines play out, but it's such at a distance. There's so much white noise with what the android or what the cyborg is doing, and all of the corporate like espionage shit, that I could care like they make you care less about the captain dying. Like, the captain dies off screen. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, that is ridiculous. Everybody in this episode, not everybody, almost everybody in this episode acts in ways that I do not think that these characters would act.
Yep.
Like, they're doing what the script and, like, drama for the show demands that they do. They're saying, but none of it feels natural to me. Very much like Prometheus, where you get to a point, it's like, why are these people acting like this? I will say this. I watch it with Steph, and she works at a hospital. And I was voicing this complaint, and she looked at me, and she was like, because I was like, these are supposed to be, for the most part, intelligent people.
Yeah.
Like, they have science officers, and they're acting so irrational to me. Like, put the body into the thing and jettison it into space. Because you can't take that thing off his face without killing him, because you saw what happened. And you're just hoping for the best. But anyway, I voiced that complaint, and she looked at me, and she was like, I work at a hospital. You would never probably go to a hospital if you knew the amount of stupid things I see smart people say and do every day. And that's true. You know, yeah. We like to bury our heads in the sand and just be like, I mean, it's honestly, it's led to our current state of politics in this country. Yeah, like, oh, well, this person should know what they're talking about, so they have my complete utter trust and faith. But then it's also become like, we don't believe in science because science can be wrong. Until it isn't, you know, you have to, it's all about proving it, you know?
So, yeah. Never have we had a problem with vaccines, and now we have a problem with vaccines because a couple of influencers, and as somebody put it, because I'm refusing to call him by name, the microwaved Mel Gibson has said that, like, why would you trust somebody with that voice? Bad. And now, like, oh god, like, yeah, let's not get started. But no, you are right. Okay, so like, if we take the approach, but of like,
that's not what I want to see.
In storytelling, it's very different, right? It's very different. Like, I can understand people making mistakes, but, like, this is all to, like, lead to an ending point.
Do you remember how they treat John Hurt's character in the first Alien film?
Yeah.
Like, I know they're not going to jettison him out into space, but they are very, very careful.
Yes.
Like, once they try to, like, cut the face hugger and they see the acidic blood, they are very, very careful. Like, everything's kind of done clinically and cleanly. And this show feels like the end of Terminator Salvation, where it's like somebody's doing a heart transplant in the desert in a tent. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's not... I mean, it's possible, but no. From a standpoint of, like, anyone on the, you know, other end of that knife is not going to survive. You will get infected and you will die. Like, it's just not, like, it's so dumb.
I forgot about that plot point that turned me off of that fucking movie.
I didn't hate that. I didn't hate that movie until the very end, and I was just like, okay, you know what? Like, I was giving you so much leeway with all of the craziness, you're like the just the batshit insane ideas. I'm like, okay, like just throwing shit at the wall. Let's see what sticks. Maybe it's fun. And then you're just like, oh, we're going to do this transplant in a tent in the middle of the desert. And I was like, oh my God, no, no. So it's whatever.
It's like to that point where they, like, you see that the aftermath of what they did, what happened to the captain, they were like, it was like, they were like, oh, we're going to do this more, more, more. Kill him.
If this killed him. Yes. If this weren't a flashback episode, if this were like the kids doing this, that makes sense because these are children trapped in adult bodies. And also
they have no knowledge of science. Like, right. these people were chosen to... Okay, here's my problem, is that these
they
fucking
kept
people were...
cutting this thing until it burned a hole through this man.
And it burned his neck off. But also, no, not only that, but these people were chosen specifically to go get specimens.
On a science mission, yes.
Like this, like the female one, you not have a, Raheem, the female one,
yeah.
she leaves the fucking specimen jar open.
Open.
To let that fucking blood tick out. I'm like, and then when he goes, did you leave it open? She goes, I didn't leave it open. I'm like, yes, you did, bitch. Like, I'm sorry. It was so frustrating to watch. Like, and you know me, Logan, I will forgive a lot. I will forgive a lot. But then if you continue to do stupid shit, all I will see is the stupid shit. And every week to week, there's just a checklist of dumb things that oh my God, like everything that the science officers do in this other than Moro, but even then Moro is like I don't even understand what he's doing, because it's like, don't you want to get the alien in, like, once you see it, because he watches the video, I'm gonna ask you this, Logan, he sees the video, he clearly sees the alien, right? Why aren't you trying to get it? Like, why are you waiting until the last minute after it's burnt a fucking hole?
I don't know, man. Like,
my God. And then it's like, there's so many bad decisions.
Like, it doesn't jive. Like, if this were the first episode, I think I would have been okay. Like, I all the characters acting stupidly does bother me, but the episode looks fantastic. The alien stuff is fucking phenomenal. It's great. Like him, I mean, it's a lot of like crib stuff from like, oh, we've seen the alien do all this stuff before. It's fine. It's whatever. I'm always here for alien chasing people through spaceship hallways. I'm just always here for it. Yeah. It looks fucking good. The costume looks great. Like, they do a really, really good job. That's why I said there's like 5 minutes of this episode.
There's always 5 minutes.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Like, this movie, it continues on the 80-20 like level of 80% stupidity and just eye rolling and 5% brilliant or 10%, 20% like truly brilliant like television or elevated to like film. Like, if you put together, I wonder if you put together the good stuff in this stuff, and you projected it on screen, it would make a great like alien short film. Because it's like, there's not going to be enough of like if it's 5 minutes an episode, it's going to be like 40 minutes, right? I mean, there's some stuff at the beginning of it that's kind of great, but it's like, I don't know, man. This stuff is so bad. Like, it's getting worse. Like, I'll be honest with you. This, like, you told me you were like, Noah Hawley just said, hold my beer. And I was like, I don't even know if he said, hold my beer. I think he said, hold the keg. Because this is like, like, in space, no one can hear you. No one can hear you do corporate arbitrage. I mean, I don't, like, it very much, so, like, this feels like I now know why you hate Andor. Like, does that make sense? Like, I now know why you hate Andor. Like, I kind of understood, but I didn't.
Hate's maybe strong.
Well, you dislike
it. Yeah.
Dislike it because it says that it's Star Wars, but it's not Star Wars, right? Like, I can make the leap about Star Wars and Andor. I cannot make the leap for this.
I think, and I have a massive love for the Alien franchise.
Yes.
And much like Star Wars, like, I am more like that towards Alien than the way people are towards Star Wars, where they're like, well, there's only like three good ones. And we've talked about this. Like, well, yeah, at the end of the day, at least we have four good Alien films.
Yeah.
The first three and Romulus.
Romulus. Yeah.
So,
which is odd to say, because, I mean, we were just talking about this, how perfectly it fits between one and two, and it's like a side adventure.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wow, like, they did it. Like, it's all the more heartbreaking that Feedy is, like, not going to be in there because of how perfectly it fits between the first and the second.
Yeah.
And
I think I would be more upset if most of the Alien franchise of the last
30-something
years weren't just me being disappointed by things. So... Yeah, I think I'd be more upset at this show, like violently angry about it. But I'm just like, well, yeah, it's, you know, much like the Marvel stuff did it so quickly that it was a little different. But much like Marvel stuff, like I think that's why I liked Romulus so much. I was more surprised that it was really good than, you know, I was anything else. Like, oh, it's actually good. Like, okay. But unfortunately, that gave me a lot of hope for Alien Earth. And being a fan of Noah Hawley's Legion, I was like, oh, okay, like, we're going to do some interesting stuff. And he's doing interesting stuff, but interesting in the way of, like, you look at somebody, like, I don't want to be cruel, but, like, you just look at somebody who has no, like, real thought in their head, and you're like, this is interesting. Like,
yeah,
not in a, like, good, intriguing way, just in a, like, I don't, okay.
Like, yeah, it's the special one. Like, you know, like yeah, you told,
I was trying not to be cruel about it, but yes, yeah, like that.
It's literally Steve. He's literally the fourth clone. He's literally the copy of a copy. And this is what happens. You tell him to draw a dolphin, and he draws the worst monster in the world that makes no sense.
You're like, this is dolphin.
Okay, yeah, dolphin.
Good job.
Good job.
We'll put this on the fridge with all the rest of your stuff.
Yeah.
It has absolutely sucked seeing these guys who really, really were doing cool, interesting things, whether you, like, ultimately love them or not, with, I mean, other properties for sure, and like JJ dabbling in the like old school Spielberg of it all, and then stepping into these properties that we love that obviously influence them and just fucking them up beyond belief. It's very, very frustrating. It comes off as like fan fiction, and not that I'm not knocking fan fiction. I've done my fair share of it. And I mean, I still daydream about, like, oh, this would be a cool Punisher story or shit like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, I don't get millions of dollars to make my ideas come true and think that I've created the ultimate art or whatever. It's very, very frustrating. So, still not loving Alien Earth, unfortunately.
Yeah, and we've got three more.
Yeah.
Three more. I, to be perfectly honest, I'm going to, Noah Hawley has ripped off whole cloth from It was like he watched Gareth Edwards, the creator, and decided that that's the visual style he wanted to use. Like, he's literally ripping off that.
I need to go back and watch this creator, because I wanted to, and then I just never got to it. And
it's a little bit more experimental. Like we've talked about, like I respect it a lot more than I enjoyed it, but I've come back to it more than a few times because of it. And it's like one of those things where it's turning around from like the rough edges have been smoothed off for me, and I'm just kind of loving it because of the visual style. I've already gotten used to the story and its hiccups, and I just again, it's one of those movies that it's like the visual style far outweighs the story, but it's Gareth Edwards, so that's kind of what I expect from him. Like, he hasn't figured out like story 100% yet. He's kind of like Ridley in his early career, though Ridley figured it out at least for that, like, you know, those first like after his first movie, after The Duelist, those two movies, like Blade Runner and even then Blade Runner, he still had to fuck around with it. Like, he took him years to figure out that story. But it's like, it's one of those, like, this is my like soft sell of the creator, which is that if you liked Alien Earth and you like the visuals, but you hate the story, watch The Creator. Because Noah Hawley is taking full cloth from it, including, I almost wonder, because they're both Fox productions, they went, you know what, go to Thailand, and it's a little bit cheaper there, but also, look at this movie that we did. And he was like, oh, movie look good. Because that's how I imagine now, after watching this fucking show, and watching, like how he, like, you know, it's like that, what's the movie where they think the guy's a genius, but he's actually a moron, and everything he says is stupid, but it's like, it's not Forrest Gump, but I can't even, it's something like that. It was made in the 90s. I cannot remember the movie where they keep on thinking that he's like brilliant, but he's really a moron. And I think that that's kind of like what you, like a less articulate way of you putting it. That's Noah Hawley. Like, I think he did one thing really brilliant, and now he's just like, oh, aliens, androids, Peter Pan. Like, that's literally, it feels so fucking random. Let's do Alien again, but not Alien. And let's have somebody special like me in it. Like, that fucking special guy. The guy who, is literally special. Like, how did he become an engineer? How did they get him to be an engineer? The guy who's with the other engineer. The Harry Dean Stanton, like, literally they took the characters from the first movie and transplanted them here and made them worse carbon copies. It's like, no, Yaphet Kotto and Harry Dean Stanton characters are not as good as Yaphet Kotto and Harry Dean Stanton, because they're Yaphet Kotto and Harry Dean Stanton. Like, you know, Ridley knew enough to, like, cast them and write them really good. Like, you know, good Lord. But yeah, it's all like for us to say, like, there's three more episodes. That's going to be great. Yeah. I'm sure that.
At this point, even if he sticks the landing, it doesn't matter. Like,
no,
it's a pretty show with good actors saying dumb lines, doing dumb shit, and a narrative that ultimately I'm not going to care about, because it's not even about the companies. It's just,
no,
it's navel gazing bullshit. So
yeah.
There's another show we've been a little bit higher on, and I'm curious if you watched this week's episode of Peacemaker.
We will table it for next week.
It's the only thing I'll say is it's fucking, it's great. It's really, really great. I'm excited to get your text response when you do watch it. You'd be like, oh, okay. Holy shit, that was awesome.
Have you been watching anything else?
Well, Wednesday. I was gonna get into some other stuff, and then the last batch of Wednesday episodes dropped, and I wound up binge watching them. Or not binging, but over a couple of days, I watched those four episodes. Oh, you know what I did watch? because Steph's a big fan, I'm going to get into it for season two starts. I started Landman. I'm about three episodes in.
Oh, okay. You're officially into the Taylor Sheridan universe.
Yeah. I've been very anti. She really likes Landman, and I don't hate the show. I really like Billy Bob Thornton. Like, I think he's a lot of fun.
I mean, Billy John Hamm.
Uh-huh. Is great, but like I don't know what he's doing, like other than collecting a paycheck, because he hasn't done much yet. Just you know, other than that, like it's okay. Like he's got a couple of kids in the show that just they suck. They just absolutely suck. And Allie Larder plays his ex-wife. I love Allie Larder. I think that so far in the show, she's not doing great work, but it's because literally they're writing this character as just not a good person, constantly drunk, and just a terrible mother to her kids. So,
oh, so basically they're doing the cliche of a Texas mother.
Yeah,
like what, really. like what people think is a cliche of a
actually
Texas mother.
That's a good. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm shitting on the show. It's worth watching for Billy Bob Thornton, 100%. But the cliche shit is really, like, he writes into a lot of cliche stuff. Like, there's nothing.
That's Taylor Sheridan. Yeah.
Everybody does pretty much what you think they're going to do. There's no real surprises. But yeah, it's, you know, it's okay. Billy Bob, absolute great performance. So he gets these long, like, monologues about just what, like, in the second or third episode, he has to meet with this lawyer about something that happened. And she's being very dismissive of the oil industry. And I mean, with good reason. Like, we all know, like, how terrible it all is, you know, if you pay attention. But Billy Bob gives this like defense of things and the way that they have to do things, that's, it's not excusing like the oil companies, just the way that the people working the day-to-day shit, you know, like she says some offhanded remark about the people working the oil fields. And he quickly jumps to their defense, basically saying like that these are people, a lot of whom don't really even have high school educations, essentially. And you're coming in here with your fucking degree, and like they make as much money as you and they work their asses off. She makes some remark about how the oil industry uses clean energy to help power the oil wells in like the wind farms and stuff like that. And he's like, do you have any idea the amount? Because they're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, do you know the amount of oil, like of fuel it takes to like bring the trucks out here to set up these windmills? Do you know like how much it takes to churn the concrete, like to mix the concrete that it takes to then drag out? Is like, and he just launches into this, oil is in everything, lady. Like, and it does end with him basically being like, the scary thing about oil is that we're running out of it and we still haven't found a replacement. Like, he does this whole thing of like, there's no such thing as clean energy. He launches into the, like, you know, you think that electric cars are going to like save the world. But the scary truth is, if we all drove electric cars tomorrow, we don't have the power grid to handle that. Yeah. And everything would collapse. Yeah, like it's really fun watching him like three or four times an episode stand up on a soapbox and do these like speeches about how everybody is just full of shit and doesn't know what they're talking about. So that it's I'd say it's worth watching for Billy Bob Thornton alone. So
okay.
But okay. Sam Elliott is coming in season two. So I am going to get to watch Sam Elliott and Billy Bob Thornton on screen together.
Is Sam Elliott playing his dad?
That would be great, right?
Because like Billy Sam Elliott
70.
Yeah. And fucking Sam Elliott is like 80. Yeah. But that's that. Yeah. That would be fucking great. Like, I like yeah. that. Okay. I do have to ask because, you know, football season's upon us. How is Jerry's cameo, or have you gotten to Jerry's cameo yet?
I haven't gotten to it yet.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to check to see if you
have. I don't think so.
No, you would know. You would know. Cause they literally stopped the show and he literally has like a monologue. He has like a 5-minute monologue.
No, then I haven't gotten to it yet. So
okay. Okay.
Yeah. I kind of want to jump into Tulsa King because Sam Jackson is joining Tulsa King.
Yes.
This coming season. So
yeah, no, absolutely. I watched the first like 5 episodes. I don't know if you remember. I don't even know if I'd mentioned it. I thought that I did.
Yeah, and you told me you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first 5 episodes were like it's like I hate saying this cuz it sounds so crass, but it's literally redneck. It's redneck Godfather. It's redneck Sopranos. That's what it is. So I don't know if anybody has heard the story about the Sopranos and how Sylvester Stallone was offered Tony Soprano and he turned it down whole cloth. And he laughed when he saw that Gandolfini got the role because they were like, he was like, this guy's fucking terrible. And then every single season, he got angrier and angrier, Stallone did, because of what the Sopranos turned into. Like, he was like, it's the fucking Godfather all over again. If you know what Stallone and the Godfather, go read about that shit and how much it haunted him. When he got a chance to do Tulsa King, like everybody said that he was like, oh, I'm not passing up my chance again. And it's interesting because his work is alive. Like he's like you know, like Stallone can sometimes be asleep. And just sleepwalk through things, but this is the Stallone from Creed, the one that's really kind of active in what he's doing, and they put a great cast around him. They really do. It's not David Chase's Sopranos. It's literally Taylor Sheridan writing. So all of the stuff of Landman. Like you get full hog, everything from Yellowstone, all the like the thing that I couldn't handle was because I'm expecting a certain level from my gangster films or from my gangster stories, and that wasn't there, and it was so melodramatic that it was like there's so much melodrama that it's like, oh, okay, it's that kind of show, which it's like I was like, okay, I'll come back to it, but it's not elevated in any way. It knows exactly what it is. Like, it's down and dirty. Have you ever seen the films of John Schwab? I don't know if you know who he is. He actually...
Not ringing a bell.
Okay, so he's known for doing these Midwestern crime family films, and like in the last 10 years, he's made like 8 of them. And, I'm going to tell you, he's like one of the most undiscovered, like he is what Taylor Sheridan is supposed to be. This guy is like, he's made movies with Paramount. Like he makes like these $10 million crime saga films about Midwestern crime families. Like it's all meth and like, I actually reviewed one of his films for whatchamacallit a few years ago. Um, for oh gosh, one of the film festivals that I go to. I cannot remember. So anyways, he, like, his stuff is like what I expect, like this Midwestern Oklahoma, like, kind of like gangster things to be, very considerate and very kind of like detailed and complex. And Tulsa King does not do that. Like, if you're in the bag for a trashy kind of like good time, that's exactly what you're going to get. So
yeah, I mean, I may jump into it eventually. Mm-hmm. It has a lot more seasons under its belt. So, and this was going to be an easier catch up, and season two starts in November. So yeah. I was like, oh, well, let's, I started watching that, finished off Wednesday. Front half of Wednesday, I think, is better than the second half. There is a body swap episode, like Freaky Friday style, in the back half of this season. That's really pretty fun and inventive and funny. So,
Okay.
Overall, Wednesday season two, I think, much better than season one. But a lot of that has to do with more of the Addams family, like, coming into it. I did text you. Casper Van Dien is in, is in a very, very, like, it's not a cameo, but he is in an episode for, you know, 5-6 minutes. And, that dude deserved a bigger career. Anyway, so you finished off Dexter, which you kind of told me last week you guys were going to start watching, or had just started watching. And so I gave up on the first Dexter revival after one episode. I was like, I don't know. I watched one or two episodes. I think I brought it up here of
the, yes, you did,
the origin show, whatever it was called, Original Sin. And I was like, it's okay, but, like, it feels like just people. It feels like I think I compared it to, like, a stage play of, like, children. like you see, like, oh, kids put on a stage play of Die Hard. And it's like, oh, this is cute how they made everybody look like younger look like the, versions of.
It's the Max Fisher players.
Yeah.
You remember, like, remember, like, that's exactly what it is, right?
I gave up on that. I was like, this is not for me. And then I when they announced the new one, I was like, yeah, look, I've been back to the Dexter well twice now, hoping that I could find something, and I didn't. So I was like, I'm not going to do this. So, but you're telling me I should.
Yeah, because I feel like this is more of a direct, this is more of what people wanted from a direct sequel to Dexter. You don't need to see the, if you wanted to, you could watch that new revival.
Resurrection?
This is Resurrection. The other one was New Blood.
Yeah.
You don't have to watch it because it literally tells you everything you need to know in the first 5 minutes of New Blood. And it's probably better that you don't, because there's an inciting incident for how New Blood ends that I feel like it's built up. And so, like, it does a disservice.
Spoilers, I guess, for New Blood. So here's the thing. Because I watched Original Sin, I know how New Blood ends.
Okay, yeah, you do know.
You think he's
okay.
Dead again.
Yes.
So Original Sin opens with him in the back of a car or in driving. I don't remember what, but he's, like, bleeding out. And the whole, like, thing of Original Sin is basically that, like, conceit of, like, somebody's dying, and so now they're going to think about their entire life.
Life, yeah. Yeah.
And that's kind of the conceit of Original Sin, which, you're not the only one saying this about Resurrection, because, like, even the studio, like, they gave up on OG Dexter after New Blood because it didn't light the world on fire. And they had intended to, like, rebrand into these offshoots, like with Original Sin, and they were doing like a Trinity Killer origin show. And
but, yeah,
I guess Michael C. Hall and company, like, they all agreed to like come back and do this, and everybody seems to be on board, so much so that the studio has now walked away from all of the other spinoffs to focus all of their energy on the Dexter franchise into this show. Like, all the money that they were going to funnel to all the other shows, all the writers that they had paid for a second season of Original Sin, they just moved those writers over to the Resurrection writer room.
As they should. As they absolutely should. Because I'm going to tell you, Resurrection, like, they get everything right. It's exactly what you want from a Dexter revival. It took them two shows, but... And the thing is that I think that they lost the thread, because nothing like
the show itself lost the thread. That last season of the Original Dexter show.
Yes. No, it is not. I mean, everybody agrees. And my wife is the hugest Dexter stan in the world. And she's like, that season shit the bed. Like, it really did. And it does, like, and, but the thing is that this one brings everything back together. It gives him a new city, but it's not bumfuck Egypt. It's New York. And, like, it's Dexter in New York, but it's also, like, he's dealing with a new set of problems that he's never dealt with before. Like I really, really enjoyed the shit out of this, because it got back to what made, for me, what made Dexter, Dexter in the first, like, say, four seasons of Dexter, which is him evading cops that are just as smart as he is. Him dealing with, like, a real world problem throughout the show. Like what my favorite part about the show was there was always a through line of, like, Dexter and his humanity of, like, an actual, like, melodrama story, right? And this one is his son. Like, fathers and sons. It's a very simple theme, but they know how to play this. They know how to work this, and how, like, Dexter... the serial killer plot of it all is actually a really clever one. It's extremely clever enough that they got Peter Dinklage involved, and they've got Uma Thurman involved in this one. I mean, the people that are actually in this show, like Eric Stone Street, who else? Eric Stone Street plays one of these people. What's his name? The guy from David Desmachlin plays one of the killers. There's another one that's there that is actually a really, like, he's super famous, and you don't, like, I was not expecting him to show up. I won't tell you who it is unless it's already been ruined. Do you know who the other serial killer is? I just want to make sure.
Harris.
Yes. Okay. So you do know. Yeah. Neil Patrick Harris. And it's not like stunt casting. These guys are really, I mean, well, hell, it even has everybody's favorite Jessica Jones.
I read that somewhere. She was a surprise. I knew Neil Patrick Harris before the season had started. Uh-huh. I saw something pop up somewhere that said, oh, Neil Patrick Harris is going to get star in the new season, Dexter. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds fun.
But also beyond that, it has some of the cameos from people in the past.
I saw that on the cast list. I saw so many of the people, that, you know, let's say aren't alive anymore.
Yep.
Seem to be guesting on this show. So that's interesting. I think the one major not that hasn't guessed it is what's her name? Jennifer Carpenter, right?
Yeah. And she hasn't shown up yet. But she's also in New Blood, from what I understood. Like, that she was in that show. I do not know the fate of her. I cannot remember, but also, like, like the thing is that they like the big thing I think the big thing is that they give David.
She is dead. Like yeah. She died at the end of the original series. So
yeah.
In New Blood, she's
a ghost.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So sorry. Yeah.
But
so we do know her fate. It's just she hasn't shown up in this show.
So. Exactly. So the way that the story works, like, you know, the way that Harry comes back is not in flashback, of course. He's like the Jiminy Cricket of Dexter, which is a great kind of conceit. At least for me, it's a really great conceit in like, but the real big find here is, David Zayas coming back as, Angel Batista. Like, yeah. And the way that they use him is exactly the way that you would expect them to use anybody from Miami PD. And it's just, it's really, I'm going to tell you, it's truly like back up to the level. I don't know how they managed to pull it off. I guess, like, you know, it took two really bad shows for them to realize, okay, let's go back to basics. Because they really kind of went back to basics on the formula for Dexter. Like, what Dexter is at its core, Dexter killing other serial killers or other bad people and him trying to get away with it and the cops chasing him and then him having family problems is all here. It's just Dexter as a man with a 20-something son and him, like, navigating fatherhood for the first time ever, and what that means, and having Harry as his, like, conscience, and him trying to, like, navigate what would Harry do with him as a son, and is his son just like him, or is he very different? It's good. It's really good. Like, the 10 episodes finished, and I was like, I want another season. Like, I genuinely want another season. They finished it in a way that, like, they stick the landing, but then they just have enough of a thread that you have a bunch of things that are out there that they could kind of go after. So I'm looking forward to it. Absolutely. Definitely a big changeover from everything that everybody has told me about the Dexter franchise with its revivals.
Yeah, I'll have to jump on board. Knowing I don't have to go back and finish New Blood or Originals, which Originals sends a prequel, other than like the very interstitial, like showing him in the car. And then I think by the end, I think they do show him like getting to New York, and so it becomes a setup for this show, but like only in the smallest possible way. I don't have to go back and watch those. You know, I can kind of just jump into this. Yeah, I'm caught up on Landman, I'll probably go back and watch this. I don't know if Steph watched Dexter. I should ask her that. So
that, maybe we'll, I mean, that sounds like a wheelhouse show for her. It definitely does. Yeah. You know, so
all right. So I don't, other than stuff I normally watch, I haven't watched anything else. I brought up Caught Stealing last week.
Yes.
And definitely wanted to have a longer discussion when you got to see it. I'm happy that you got to see it sooner rather than later. I wish you had gotten to see Toxic Avenger, but like, I understand. That's not the
it was, dude, it was impossible. Well, yeah. Like, it was like, okay, so like, here's the thing. You know how like we've talked about sometimes, I want to actually have this conversation, because do you remember how like sometimes we talk about how like I have easy access to things and you don't, but then there's other times where you have super easy access to something and I don't. This was one of those cases where like I went to go see it on Monday and it was gone. It was playing one place. It was at Universal City Walk, the same place that has Universal Studios. It has a huge movie theater that you have to spend $35 to park at, right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But here's the best part, is that it was playing at 11:30 at night. That was the only screening left.
Yeah. I understand, like, it's not a money, it wasn't a film that was ever going to generate that. And theaters probably, once it didn't pull in anything, were just like, well, we'll put up one screening. They did that this week with Twinless in my theaters. Like, it's playing one show, one theater in all of Chattanooga every day. You get one show. So, because I had thought about going to see it yesterday. It didn't work out for us to go see anything yesterday just because our day kind of got away from us. But I don't have to get maudlin or anything, but yesterday was the 5-year anniversary of Ryan passing, and I had thought about going to see Twinless and just, you know, going, sitting in a dark theater and crying.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out, but that's probably for the best it didn't work out. Instead, we just sat home. Oh, this is what we did. Sorry, I jumped very, very quickly. We sat home and watched TV, watched the first two episodes of The Paper.
Okay. I was going to say, like, I wanted to wait until I figured that you might have, but I do want to ask, because everybody is fucking talking about it very praiseworthy. I wanted to ask you if you did, and if so, how many episodes and your thoughts.
Yeah, I think you have to have liked the later seasons of The Office to really like this show.
Okay.
And I like the later seasons of The Office. I don't think they're as good as some of the mid seasons of The Office, but I enjoy the Robert California years. So it's good. It's not great, but it's good. People throwing negatives at the show, I don't fucking get. Like, oh, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's pretty good. So,
I mean, that's a good place to start, right? Like I was going to ask, like, you don't want it to be like, all great shows start off good. Like, The Office wasn't great the first season. It's not rough, but it's good, but it doesn't become The Office until like season three.
It's got a good bones to it. And the cast is really, really good.
They've already announced season two is already in the works.
Yeah. There is one character from the jump. Like, I get, like, from the jump of The Office, they want you to kind of not like Michael. And then by season two, they're like, oh, we have to make people like this guy because American television doesn't really, like, work if you have a main character who you absolutely can't fucking stand. So they had to make him a little bit more likable. The main character of this show is very likable. They give him an antagonist, which is not something The Office had. The main character was kind of the antagonist, so he was kind of just tripping himself up. This show gives him somebody that is combative against him, and that's kind of frustrating. But you'll see when we can talk about it more if you get a chance to watch some of it.
I definitely will. So yeah, okay.
I think you'll enjoy it. There's some really funny shit in it. Anyway, you did get to go see Caught Stealing. Sucks you didn't get to see Toxic Avenger, but I think it's going to be streaming like pretty soon. Like they seem like the 4K. Also, if you are going to buy it, the Steelbook is on sale for $33 pre-order right now, whereas the regular 4K is like $45. So
yeah, it's actually
going down Amazon to pre-order that Steelbook.
It's actually down to $31. $31 for the collector's edition. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm going to do that. But yeah, I'm very much so looking forward to to actually watching it, just because I'm a huge Toxic Avenger fan.
Caught stealing. So full on, because there was some stuff that I had to just be careful about what I said, but now we can just spend the next like 20 minutes talking about this movie. What the fuck is...
This movie's dark.
Why do you kill Zoe Kravitz, man?
I like the decision of going as dark as it goes.
Keep fucking with the tone. Keep trying to tell me it's this fun adventure movie, even after you killed this character that you spent all this time, well, not all this time, but a good 20 minutes, like, setting up this, like, loving kind of, like, relationship, and like you're kind of just pulling for him, and then you fucking kill her, but then you keep trying to sell me on like, yeah, but see, he's having an adventure. No.
Okay, this is where I think you and I with the point of view differ. I don't think it's that, because they keep on going back to like, it becomes about his inability to, here's where I feel it's not a great movie. It's a good movie, because it's tone, and it's not so much its tone, but its intentions. I don't think it's almost like one edit before is the movie that they should have released, because it's all about Hank and his inability to accept responsibility. Not only for himself, but for his actions. And
I agree with that.
And I don't think that that's clear enough in the movie. I think that they move so quickly on things, and they don't let certain things linger, that it does a disrespect to certain other things, like Yvonne. Like, Yvonne, that hit me hard. Like, as soon as...
No, you can't kill, like, I spent the rest of the fucking movie just being like, why did you kill this character? Why did you kill this character? How can he have a happy ending?
But that's the whole point, is that he can't. Like, that's the thing, is that for me is, it's a, like, at the end, even with the mother, even with giving the mother the money, even with going down to Mexico, he's not gonna be happy, right? Though I feel like it does the movie a huge disservice to have the animated cat. Like, it's some sort of light, like, oh, he survived. No, this motherfucker is like seriously scarred for the rest of his life. But also, he's been running he's been running away from his responsibilities forever. Like, this is like to me, this is a story about how karma come back boomeranging and hits you harder than you ever expected, because you didn't accept the responsibility of a murder that happened on your watch. Yeah. Like, literally, like, it's just like I said, it's weird, because the movie is like one, like, it's almost like they edited it too much. Like, if you give me back 5 minutes, or you like, and I don't know. Like, it's not a, like, add extra plot, but you let things ruminate a little bit more, it becomes this movie about, like, that whole, what, like, you can't run away from your demons. Eventually, your demons are going to catch up with you.
Yeah, but then at the end, he still fucking runs away.
Yes, that's the thing, is that, so, like, but I think, like, at the end, I don't think he's like, and then also, but also, I also know that there's two other books, and it deals with those specific themes. After I watched the movie, I was like, okay, Charlie Houston, like, I know your comic book shit, but let me see. Did you make other Hank books? And he sure as shit did. And he sure as shit deals with, the books are exactly what you think that they are. They're dark film noir. They're dark noir crime novels about a guy who has to come to terms with
shit that he did in his past and how he, like, he keeps on making the wrong decision. Like, he goes on the run, right? Well, the running doesn't help because it comes back to face him big time in the next book. But it's like this weird thing. Like, you're right. Like, there's this weird tonal thing that happens that comes up that makes it feel like light, but it's actually like, it's almost like this whole thing of like, oh, well, it doesn't matter.
I would be interested in if it plays different in the book. See, I'm not putting it on Charlie Houston. I've never read any of his novels, but yeah. I think only read his Moon Knight stuff, and his Moon Knight stuff is fucking great.
Yes.
And so I put it straight down to
Aronofsky
direction. Yeah. Like I like Darren Aronofsky. Like, I am maybe one of a handful of people that will fucking defend Noah as a brilliant, brilliant masterpiece. I just don't understand it. Like, if it is in the script or the story, if it is there and it's not you, why you don't step in and go, okay, we have a clear tonal shift when this happens. And for the most part, he does. I will say, I don't think it's the character not taking it seriously. The movie is not taking it seriously, if that makes sense.
It does. Like, it's like, and I think it's
fucking scene that's so funny where he's sitting there with the two Hasidic Jewish mobsters at their mother's house that happens after his fucking girlfriend was murdered.
Yes. Well, and here's the thing is that the weirdest part about this movie is that. And here's where the tricky tone comes in for me is that it's all these psychopaths that are having a good time, not him. And the film allows that space for psychopaths to have the good time, right? Like the two Russians, Bad Bunny, even Regina King, all of them are having a great time and they're joking because they're all psychopaths, right? Including the two Hasidic hitmen, right? They're having a great time because they're psychopaths. And when you find out what you find out, and I won't ruin the one thing that, like, if that's the point where you tapped out and you went, oh, fuck you guys for doing this, I understand. Because it is a dirty trick. It's a dirt, like, you know that, that they did the what they did. That's
the one thing about the end of the movie that I really, really appreciated.
Okay.
The fact that they didn't back down and give him this moment of like, even though he does ultimately run away, he gets to take control of these people who keep just batting him around. Like same way a cat is always just playing with shit. You know, he's being treated like they're all the cats and he is the shit that they just keep knocking over. And he's like, fuck this. Like, you gave me the keys. I'm driving. Like, I find out that you've sold yourself as like, we're not so bad. And I find out you fucking committed this heinous act against me on top of everything else you've already done to me. And fuck you. I'm taking all of this into my own hands. And that's great. Like, I really think that last scene in the minivan is it's not the last scene, but that scene in the minivan is fucking phenomenal. Like, well, it's the tension's so well built. The reveal is fucking amazing. Like, what he does and how he kind of formulates his very half-assed plan. Like, I think that part of the movie is great. I think every part of this movie is great. I do not think it's a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just doesn't know what it wants to be. If you take this whole movie in just individual chunks, I think they're all great. It's as a whole, it doesn't work because of the constant tonal shift for me. Like,
okay.
If I sold it as like, I don't like this movie, that was the wrong sell. I don't like the constant shift of tone, because I also wanted to have a good time, but once you fucking murdered that one character who you wanted us to care about, literally 20 minutes into the movie, it's not like it happens at the end and it's just like, no. Oh, fuck, man. Like, you did it so early in the movie that I can now no longer have a good time, because, you know, like, if he goes through all of that and right before he finds out that she's dead, like Regina King, like,
mm-hmm.
tells him, like, yeah, your girlfriend's dead, and, like, he doesn't believe it, and he runs and sees her and thinks it's Regina King that killed her, and then gets his revenge on her, and, like, okay, that's a little bit different, and then you get the big reveal, and it's like, oh, shit. But, like, 20 minutes in, he runs to her apartment, finds her dead, and then, like, you kind of are still trying to have a good time with this movie, and I just can't have a good time with it. You know, I think that's it's rough. It's absolutely rough.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it is. Like, okay, so, like, somebody had told me, you know, it was like Aronofsky got $50 million to make a studio movie, and he was like, I want to make Pi and Requiem for a Dream again. Does that make sense? Like, and he did. Yeah. Like, it's a movie that does not play nice. Like, it. Like, and I respect that. I respect that about the movie, but it's still not for everybody. Like, that moment is so mean. It's one of the meanest moments that a movie is, like, a studio movie has played with in a long time for me. Because, like, I kind of had an idea it was going to happen. As soon as he pisses himself and he loses his kidney, you know all bets are off. Like, it's a movie that deals with, like, this weird tone, like, this weird thing about violence, where violence actually matters, and, like, you know, just because you kick somebody four times in the stomach doesn't mean they get to walk away from it. Like, there's consequence, right? And then I was like, oh, man, this is not going to end well for anybody. But then when he goes there, and you know that it, like, it's not telegraphed, but it's very telegraphed, and you see that, it's like the meanest thing that a movie has done in a long time, because they're so well purposed with the way that they build up that character and his relationship with her. It's like, it echoes through the whole film. And you're right. Like, anything that seems like jokey, you're just like, fuck you. He just lost his fucking, like, his girlfriend, the love of, like, probably one of the loves of his life, if not the love of his life. But yeah. Also, like, it's also, I think, commenting on movies like that. Like, you know, there are movies where...
Oh, dude. It is such a throwback to, like, shit we used to get in the... This is the post-Pulp Fiction,
yes.
90s stuff. Like, in that era, like, this is a perfect movie in the like, Boondock Saints era. Like,
yeah.
If I go to the video store, I watched Boondock Saints or Pulp Fiction or whatever, and then the clerk is like, you know what movie I think you'd like? Try Caught Stealing. Like, it's that level of, you know, recommendation. And it fits perfectly in that era. It absolutely does. I wish the soundtrack was a little more 90s, because, I mean, it's set in the 90s, which is the perfect way to set this movie, because if you have extremely modern technology, so much of this movie just does not fucking work.
It doesn't work. No, it doesn't. Like, it really doesn't. But also, like 98 is, like, the perfect time, because it's,
yeah,
it is, like, it is commenting on, like, the, like I said, it's very post Tarantino, where, like, the story they're telling is very much so, like, Guy Ritchie-esque. Like, yep. It's not Tarantino as much as it's, like you said, it's like the, it's like Duffy, it's like Boondock Saints, the director of Boondock Saints, Duffy, I can't think of his last name, or his first name, but also, like, it's all of the guys who were the disciples of Tarantino coming, and like, it's almost like Darren Aronofsky was going, yeah, but fuck you guys, because I didn't make a movie like that, and I'm going to show you what the reality of that movie is. It's very weird because it's like, it doesn't play nice. It's not a nice movie. But in another era, like you said, in another era, this would be the type of movie that one of those guys would have made. And they would not have cared about the, like, the death of Zoe Kravitz is something that would have happened that would not have mattered. It would have just been one of the extra plot points put forth and pushed on in the movie. It would have been like, oh, you want to see how hardcore we are? Let's kill the girlfriend. Let's kick the cat. Let's do all of these fucking things. But, like, Aronofsky is such a... here's the thing. I feel like Aronofsky is a humanist at his core. And that's the reason why so many people hate his movies, is because they hurt. Like, this movie hurts. Like, it's not a... It's like a car crash. Like, exactly what happens to Hank, right? Two times. And that's what I find is so beautiful, is that he ruins his life and sends it into a spiral for 20 years because of a car accident, and he kind of course corrects because of a car accident. But
yeah,
all of his movies, including Noah, like, Noah to me, like I'm with you. Noah is like a masterpiece. It's a weird biblical sci-fi masterpiece, right? Like, but the most horrifying moment in that movie is when we see Noah see all of those animals being slaughtered. Yeah. And being eaten, and you don't see anything. It's just like, it's just the absence of humanity. And it's so hard. It hits so fucking hard. And that's the power of Aronofsky, right? It's almost like you want him to take the pedal off, or you want him to, like, do something to make it a little bit more palpable, but he doesn't. And I don't know, man. Like, it's one of those things where I'm going to return to this. I'm going to probably buy the 4K because it hit me so hard that it's one of those movies where it's like, you're right. Like, you kind of put a finger on it. It is a post Tarantino type of story.
They don't make shit like this. And we talk about it a lot. It seems like we bring it up a lot, but it's never about the same kind of film. They just don't make movies like this anymore. And because, like, it didn't do a lot of money at the box office, so that's why they kind of don't make, like, this is the kind of shit that wound up going straight to video. Yep. And then straight to video, like, doesn't get money anymore, so, you know, it sucks. And, like, I know I've been really, really negative, but I do think it's a very good movie. It's a very well-made film. There's a couple of other things. I don't buy Austin Butler as an everyman. He's fine in the role. Like, I think he's fine. But, like, I just don't buy him. It's like, the dude is too...
I mean, gorgeous?
He's
too Val Kilmer, dude. Like yeah. Doesn't he look like... Isn't he... I keep on looking at him and going, fuck, dude. When are they going to cast you in Heat 2 as, like, Val Kilmer? Because you are Val Kilmer.
They should. Yeah. I agree. And, yeah, this is my first, probably the first thing I've really, really watched him in. I think he's great. I don't buy him as an everyman, but I think he's great. I think, and not that Zoe Kravitz isn't drop dead, just like a walking work of art.
Oh, my God.
She's also, and they're both really great actors, but.
Yeah.
Zoe Kravitz has this ability to, it's like chameleon almost, where she's just, there are people that can walk out in like a ball gown and you're like, oh, this is like classiest of classiest of, like, she's a fucking princess, you know, or queen. Sorry, I should say queen. But then also, like, she can paint, like, every other fingernail black, muss up her hair, put on ratty jeans and a tank top. And it's just like, yeah, she does her laundry on the street corner. And, like, she bums cigarettes from me all the time. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, Austin Butler can't fucking do that.
He can't do that yet. Like, he's a guy, like... He's a guy, like, he reminds me of Carl Urban, where I needed Carl Urban to age like 15 years before I believed the pretty boy was nothing but a pretty boy acting tough. Like, give me, like, when we're in our 60s and Austin Butler's in his 40s, that's when Austin Butler will be like, okay, dudes like him too. Because it's just like, it's not it's not a hateability thing. It's just,
it's a DiCaprio thing. It's exactly. DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Where
no, absolutely. Or the Pitt thing.
Until, yeah, until he got into, you know, his, like, 30s.
Yep.
Dudes like us were just like, oh, fuck that pretty boy. You know? And, but meanwhile, he was doing really good acting the whole time. If you make this movie in early 2000s, I like Joaquin Phoenix is the level of what I kind of think you need, you know, somebody who can be like, feel a little like more proper, but can also be like really kind of scuzzy. But all in all, like, I think Austin Butler did a really good job. If this had done really well, I think probably could have done the other books. Like, that may have been interesting just to see, like, what else could, you know, could you get from that world? I think Matt Smith is really, really good here. He is very slapsticky kind of comic shit.
And but also, like, okay, so to your point, his kind of, like, as soon as he gets hit, like, after they've set the tone, you it know what's happening. It just becomes like,
what can we do to make sure he gets hit in the head again and again and again and again?
Yeah, and but then also, it also becomes this whole thing of like, okay, so when is he going to die? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a very much like, they telegraphed it. They're like, oh, so now that you know this, let's go ahead and like, make you understand we are doing this. So it's not shocking when you see him like, meh.
Yeah, that chasing is fucking great.
Oh, God,
It's absolutely great. The shooting on location, man. Like, like I said, it's just the shit that they don't do anymore. Everything's, I mean, they've always shot on sound stages, but everything's just fucking screen on screen now. And it just sucks. And watching something like this, even though, like I said, I think it's a very good movie. I liked it. I didn't love it. It's maybe not something I'll ever revisit, but it does make me miss the shit we used to have.
like,
you know, just visceral kind of real tactile filmmaking. And you just don't get a lot of that anymore.
We don't get it at all. Like, even in stream, like, even the streaming versions of it, like, this is shot on 35 millimeter. It's shot on location. Like, it's, there's a, there's an old school version, like, there, like, this is the old school version of, like, what streaming does. It feels like it's fake, right? Like, if we even get something like this, right? Because it feels like it's gritty and grimy and like true in a true way. Whereas, like, anything that we see, it's done on digital. It feels fake. It doesn't have like the kind of purpose and like general like thoughtfulness that this movie does. Like, people are making movies like this now. Yes, they are. But they're all like, oh, you know, wouldn't it be cool if they did this? And they don't invest in anything. Like, they don't invest in character or anything.
I would say probably, even though we're lamenting and like, don't make movies like this and they don't make money really anymore, I will point to two movies that one I liked a lot and or another one I didn't love that did come out this year that did do well, but studios will probably take the wrong lessons from, like Ryan Coogler's movie from earlier this year.
Sinners.
Yep. Did extremely fucking well. Sinners was a huge hit, and that's what they did. Like, it was real fucking filmmaking.
Yep.
And so, you know, maybe that's like more points in our favor and kind of fights our argument that they don't do shit like this anymore. But Hollywood will take the wrong lesson from that. And I think they'll take the wrong lesson from Weapons, which is done really fucking well. And it's also like shot the way they used to shoot shit. Like there's a real tactile filmmaking effort there. And the only thing that's kind of like more modern is like the dreamy stuff. But even it's such a small part of the movie. So,
but even then it's shot on 35. So it feels like a part of it. Like, and it's done in a way like both Coogler and like, you're right. Both Coogler and Craigers, Zegger's movie, are films that understand the tactile medium of film, right? Like not like, it's almost like we have to separate between film and digital. Because even in even in the digital environment, you lose something. Like you lose something. Like you lose the urgency of film. And it's like you were right. Like they're gonna learn the wrong lessons from each of these movies. And even like the mistakes of Scott stealing are the
take this shit every fucking time over. Like, 60% of the stuff we've watched this year, like over most of the superhero stuff I've watched this year, like outside of like Superman, like, not to rehash our Fantastic Four thing, but like I had just the fact that I had a reaction to this movie is better than Fantastic Four to me, because like my reaction to Fantastic Four was like, well, I guess at least it didn't suck. Like there were a couple of things that I was like, oh, that's fucking cool. Like seeing Galactus for the first time and the way they did the Silver Surfer. But everything else, I was just like, well, it doesn't suck. I'm just kind of not in it. I'm not, really... engaged by it. This movie, I was engaged. It pissed me the fuck off. Like, that's at least something.
It's a reaction. You had you had an actual reaction to something. You actually said, holy shit, I don't like this. And it's not that I don't like this. It's that I don't like this part.
There are people that love Pulp Fiction as their favorite. I think it's... I agree with Tarantino. His best film is fucking Inglourious Basterds. He says it in the movie. This is my masterpiece. It fucking is. But I don't love Pulp Fiction. There are parts of Pulp Fiction that are some of the best pieces of cinema of the last 50 years.
Yes.
But I don't love that movie. And I don't think this is a Pulp Fiction level thing, but it is of that type, where it's just like, I don't love this movie, man, but like there's some shit in this movie that really is, it's really fucking good, hopefully it catches a little bit more bigger of an audience on streaming. What was the last? Was The Whale the last Darren Aronofsky movie?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what he does next. I hope it's more like this.
Yes, but a little bit more genre-y, but less like a human scale genre. Like, you know what this actually made me feel? Is this made me miss whatever his Wolverine would have been.
Oh, God, man.
Like between this and Noah, it always makes me feel like, fuck, they missed the boat on this.
Really did. So, it's a good thing because he was either one of the first or like in that talk, and then he walked away and we wound up getting,
Mangold. Yeah. But without Mangold, we don't get Logan. We just can't take away from that. And then also, additionally, we don't get Mangold's career that we have now. To which I wouldn't trade that. Yeah.
For the best. even if we don't like, I didn't watch The Whale because I'm just not gonna, but even if that movie has very mixed opinions about it, it got a guy who deserved a lot of credit and never got it, something that he absolutely fucking deserved.
Yeah.
So, and I want to see Brendan Fraser's new movie. Like,
yes. What was it? The rental family.
Yeah. Like at that trailer, I was like, oh, I'm so fucking in for this, man. All right. So next week, I'm guessing I'm hoping you have the time. I've already got plans Thursday afternoon to go see The Long Walk.
Yes, I'm trying to actually, I know my wife desperately wants to see it cause she's a huge King fan. But if I can't, I will be going to see it on a Thursday or Friday morning screening so we can talk on Saturday and then we'll go see that. I will see it a second time.
Well, I'll hit you with this. I did not know she was a huge King fan. So first of all, I'm a huge King fan. You know that.
Yes.
Something came out this week that I didn't know fucking existed, or was going to exist. And we can end with this. Mari Sendak, years and years ago, did some like layouts for a play of Hansel and Gretel that somebody was going to put on. Either it didn't happen. I don't remember the story. I just was reading about this. Like, it hit like my radar literally Friday. Stephen King teamed up with the Mari Sendak, like his
estate. Yeah, his estate. Uh-huh.
Took those drawings and he rewrote Hansel and Gretel. So in stores this past week is Hansel and Gretel by Stephen King and Mari Sendak.
Dude, I did not know about this. I have to go to Barnes & Noble then. Oh, and I'm man. Like,
I'm on, like, I have my ear to the ground on Stephen King shit. I fucking thought. I listened to the King cast fairly regularly. I have not heard anybody fucking talk about this. And I was just like, wait, what now? Second thing, I finished Don't Flinch. I don't know if your wife's read that yet. It's pretty good. But it's not King. There is a new book of short stories called...
Yes.
Okay. It's the end of the world as we know it. Yeah.
Yes.
If you know she does not fucking have that, I am six stories into it, and holy shit.
I just bought that for her because I heard Cargill talking about it because he has a story in it.
Yep.
He was very excited.
I'm reading his story next.
Have you read
every
his
fucking
books?
Story is great. No, I haven't.
Oh, I haven't. Man. His books are really good. But anyways, no, absolutely.
I did not think anybody could write in a... I know people try to ape his style.
Yes.
But these people are... It is channeling Stephen King, but also stories that he couldn't write. If that makes any sense.
No, absolutely. I read the first one while I was at Barnes & Noble. And I was like, oh, I need to fucking get this book.
There was a story about a kid who his whole family dies in his house. And it's just him and his dog. And because something happens and he gets like sidetracked with something, like we're human, we all do. He accidentally leaves the fucking door to his house open and the dog gets out and it's just him trying to find his dog.
Oh, and wow.
I'm like, it's so fucking good. And I haven't read a bad story yet. I'm blown away. Like, I want a Tales from the Crypt level. And now I also want, like, okay, well, we did this for The Stand. Like, is he okay if we do this for
the Gunslinger universe?
Like, can we do this for all of that world? Like, can people write stories in that? Because holy shit, man. Like, it's worth the fucking time. I have not hit a bad story yet. I just finished one about this woman, because it does some like all over the world stuff. This woman in Puerto Rico who, like, her husband dies, her very young baby dies, her neighbor dies, like, and it has that, I don't want to sound like I'm, stereotyping anybody, but I think it's fair to say that, like, Hispanic culture, like Puerto Rican mm-hmm. culture, like it's more close knit.
Okay.
Than we are. You know what I mean?
No, like, absolutely.
It's family, you know? And so, like, there's just the way it's written, it's more visceral to me than like reading King talking about like somebody whose child dies. It feels like there's more weight to it. But it's also in a King style.
Mm-hmm.
And he does the introduction and like him saying, like, when they proposed this idea, I was like, no, I'm not dead. Why are you writing tribute shit to me? Like, kind of grumpy old man. And then like, I kind of got bullied into it. Then I read the stories and fuck, I'm glad that I said okay to this. And I was like, okay, we'll see. And like, here I am, like I said, 5-6 stories in, and I'm like, I'm so fucking into this book. I want to reread The Stand, but now I'm just worried that The Stand won't be as much fun's not the right word, but won't have the same like weight that these stories are having. Because like, I mean, I know what happens in The Stand. Fuck the dark guy and like all of Flagged, all of it. Like even Mother Abigail. But yeah, it's, if you're a Stephen King person, like most Stephen King fans did know that the book was on our radar.
Yeah.
Cause like I'd heard them talk about it on the King cast, but the fucking Hansel and Gretel children's book didn't know it existed, man. And I'm just like, holy shit, I gotta get a copy of this. So I almost bought one at the bookstore yesterday, but I was like, I can save like $6 on Amazon, even though I shouldn't be giving Amazon my money. So, anyway, yeah, hopefully we talk a lot of King stuff next week. So, I'm going to try to get caught up on the Institute. We watched the first episode or two and then just kind of fell off. So I might try to watch that. So, until then, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com, where we've got a bunch of new 4Ks, and also got some stuff that's coming out.
You're killing my wallet, man.
Every time you post something,
I'm like, go to Amazon.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, it's really tough. It is not. But this week I've got all 4Ks this week. A bunch of good stuff. If you are a fan of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2003, I'm going to have a review of that, that 4K and its prequel, which is actually a sequel, which I did not like whatsoever, but the 4K is fantastic. Go ahead and tune in this week because there's a bunch of other new 4Ks that I have that are going to be that I'm going to be discussing, which is all great and all good. Got a lot of horror based stuff that's going to be discussed because it's that time of year, and that's what Arrow and all the likes like to release during this time of year. So yeah. Just be on the lookout for that stuff. And then, like you said, we will be back next week, probably talking The Long Walk. I am super excited. Super excited.
Me too. Every time I see a trailer, I'm just like, oh, God, man, this movie is going to fucking gut me. So,
yep.
Yeah, well, we'll see you guys next week. Number one.
1, Star Wars. Number 2, comics. Number 3, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Cal. Number 8, The Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. Back before they all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything.